Where's the intro?
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
This is All About
Wine. All About Wine.
The top show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on.
It is on.
Here's Ron.
All right, bus people. Bus people are happy. It is warm in Florida. I don't know, what is the current temperature? I can get that real fastly here, I think.
100 degrees. 79.
You're a little distance away from me. Mine says 75, but I'm on the coast, and you're more in the center of the state, so it's usually warmer there. But it's warm here in Florida again, so the bus people are happy, and everybody here is happy. Mm-hmm. And I think once you hit the border of Florida, it immediately drops, 60 degrees?
Like the price of gas.
Yeah. Exactly. So
In the video, where is the bus pulling up to and opening the door then? That's what, is it in this part of Florida or your part of Florida? I don't know.
I gotta check. We're sitting in the studio and we know the bus people are there, but
they could be in a field out in the swamp somewhere. We don't know.
I mean, somewhere in Ocala, somewhere there in the fields between the two of us, and it's a possibility. I don't know. That's true, because like I say, being in the studio, we're sort of isolated here, and we just assume that they're having a good time. They could be. That's something for us to think about there.
Welcome. It's not September 7th of 2011. It is February 17th, 2022. So, yeah, we're kind of messing with you before the show. But
yes.
You're smart. You knew that.
You're
already
smart people. Smart enough to listen to All About Wine. They can figure that out. I didn't push any buttons.
No, I just heard a tone. Like a push button.
Not on this end.
Wow.
Nothing here. So, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, well. Now, BTR. BTR plays games with us. I don't know if they do it with everybody, but I know they do it with us. So, We're getting used to them. All right. This is All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. We are live. If you are listening to us now on February the 17th, 2022, like Mike just said, at 7:04 p.m. Eastern Time, then you're live. And you can get in touch with us by messaging us or going on Facebook and messaging us and all that. And we'll answer your questions or talk to you through that. And you can chat to us too, call in and chat to us, but all of it's through messaging. We don't do any live talking. We've learned our lessons over the last 10 years, 11 years. So, got any questions or anything, you can always email us too, and we'll be happy to address those. So I don't think there's anything new out there. Super Bowl last Sunday for all of you sports fans. I was sort of like, meh, on the Super Bowl. There was neither team that I was really cheering for or not cheering for. It was just sort of like, you know, it's another football game. I was a little disappointed in all the advertisements, though. That's one thing I can say. Didn't seem like it had the, oh, wow, that's a great advertisement that we've had in the past. For some reason, it didn't seem that way to me. I may be mistaken, but I watched the Super Bowl because of the advertisements. And like I mentioned to Mike before the show, there's a lot of people that they showed on different advertisements, celebrities, I guess they were, that I didn't recognize. I didn't know if it's a whole new area of celebrities out there that I'm not familiar with or what it is, but there was a lot of people that I should have known who they were and I didn't, but not important. So hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl. Hope you had it. What do we got? We got the Olympics going on now. The United States is in fourth place in the medal count right now. They're in second place on the gold medal count, I think, but the total medal count, they're in fourth place, which is always the competition within the competition. How many medals did your country get? And as always, there's the controversy of, you know, when Russian girl had a banned substance, but she got to compete in ice skating, and then an American girl, or was it American or German girl? I think American girl had banned substance, and because of some pills she was taking, and she was not able to compete, and so you always have to have the controversy. But, you know, the thing is with the Olympics, all these people see everybody all the time. All the ice skaters know all the other ice skaters because there's competitions throughout the year. And so because of that, it's, you know, it's not like it's, oh, I don't know who that is. Hi, my name is. It's like, oh, hi, how you doing? You know, and so it's fun. The United States or the world doesn't see them all. And that's the big thing with the Olympics. It's an international stage. But otherwise, it's the competitions go on continuously all the time. Okay, enough of my commentary. I just heard another ding. Did somebody text us on Facebook? Yeah.
No, that was a disconnect for some reason. I was getting buffering errors, so I had to reconnect it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just heard it. I'm going, ooh. Well, that's strange.
Yeah, I don't
know. I could say Facebook, or not Facebook, Blog Talk Radio plays with us, you know. So has little games and everything. Okay. Got news to talk about tonight. Wine news, wine-related news, wine stuff. Not just wine itself, but wine stuff, different interesting things that in the wine industry that will impress and amaze you. Maybe, maybe not. But if it does, great. If it doesn't, it's okay too. All right. Article out of Beverage Dynamics magazine talking about how wine is rebounding. Last year wasn't a good year for wine. The COVID-19, we heard about how the wine category is the sales are increasing, but there's a lot of the wines that have fallen down in different areas. And it's amazing, some of the ones that we're so used to. People are buying different wines, wines that we're not used to, wines that you don't normally hear the name. Sales are going up. But the sales are going up because wineries are sending out directly. And because of that, if you have a favorite winery, you're calling them up and saying, okay, I'd like to order a case of this or a case of that. And they're sending out directly. And so therefore, it's not affecting the numbers of some of the bigger wineries. Some of the ones that you walk into your grocery store, or drugstore, or Sam's Club, or Costco or anything, and pull them off the shelf because, well, we haven't been able to go out and do that stuff. And so it slowed it down there. And the ones that are being bought are the ones that don't really add up on the numbers that you normally see that. Now, if all that makes sense. So this is five top table wines that are usually right at the top, the ones that usually get the big numbers and all that stuff, and usually you hear about all the time. I just want to let you know. Now, this was taken from total U.S. supermarkets, drugstores, mass merchandisers, gas and convenience stores, military commissaries, and stores. Yeah, the things I just mentioned. These are where the wines are sitting out there, and these are the ones that people walk in and say, oh, there's a Barefoot. I'll pick up a bottle of that. And now they're having, well, the past year, year and a half, they haven't been able to do that a lot because of COVID and restrictions and all. So people haven't been grabbing them. Well, because of that, Barefoot, the number one over the past year, is down 15.5%, which is substantial. The 15.5%, when you're talking in the $600 million range, what their income is, you know, you drop that down 15% and 15.5%, that's substantial. Sutter Home is number two. They're down 3%. The only one that didn't drop is Josh Sellers, J-O-S-H, Josh Sellers. They increased by 9.6%, which surprised me, but Josh Sellers has been doing their fair share of advertising. So because of that, I think it's something that people, the name is easy to remember and people are thinking of it. Another one that's down is Franzia Box. That is down 9.9%. And again, you think 9.9%, but when they're doing business of $368 million, 9.9% of that is a pretty big chunk. And Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, and we all are familiar with Woodbridge all over the place, that's down by 13.5%. So it's amazing. Total table wine market, and these are all classified as table wines, is down 6.8%. So it's taking its toll. It's not the boutique wineries or all that, the ones that you can order directly from and people are. It's these big ones where you pick up at your local store, things like that, that has felt the crunch of not having people able to walk by their display and grab a bottle. So I just thought that was an interesting little trend there. Okay, let me get rid of this and go on to the next one. And the next one is advertising. Advertising to get the word out, to get things out there and all that. And they've been trying different things. And the latest one they have is Elizabeth Banks, who is an actress. And she is holding a snake. And in the video, Elizabeth Banks says, who's an investor in the company and is chief creative officer, announced that running a sustainably sourced wine business is about giving back. So she said that's why Archer Roos, which is the name of the company, Archer Roos, is offering a special giveaway. For every 100,000 cases of wine you buy, you'll be sent a free live snake. Yeah, okay. Well, it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing for all the promos that they're doing all the time for everything else. And Archer Roos is a canned wine company. So they're trying to get their name out there and trying to do something just to... well, poke fun at all the other stuff. And it goes on and says, that's right, a live snake of our choosing, sent right to your door while supplies last. Because we believe wine can make the world a better place and you deserve the snake of your dreams. And so you know, it's a joke. And the executive team admitted to would not admit to anything of the sort on the conversation about sending out a snake that it was a joke, but it just basically is a joke. And you see all sorts of stuff out there about different companies offering prizes, gift cards, and so Archer Roost is doing their thing, offering a snake for every 100,000 cases of Archer Roost wine, which they come in four different styles. So, you know, it's, you get 250,000 of each style. So you get your, 100,000 that way. And, now you get your free snake. They, and you say they send it to you. Well, Google told us that you can't ship a live snake through UPS or the U.S. Postal Service. And snakes are classified as non-mailable live animals. But FedEx does take non-venomous reptiles. They will ship non-venomous reptiles. So you can get it shipped to you. FedEx will do it. But I just thought that was funny that they're playing the game. The snake video has gotten 56,000 views on Banks' Instagram account alone and 7,000 views on Archer Roost's account. And so it's getting out there to the people. They said if you want to do it, this paragraph says the chances that anyone will take up on the offer are slim to none, but the suggested retail price for 100,000 cases of Archer Roost canned wine is $10 million. That is before tax and shipping. I would think that they would pick up shipping. I mean, if you're going to order 100,000 cases of their wine, I think they would pick up shipping. But, $10 million before tax and shipping. Place your order. Go to the website. Call 1-555-3-SNAKES. SNAKES. And so I called that, and it was just a recording that said, leave your name and address, or name and email, and the sales representative would reach out and be in contact. So I did that, and I haven't heard anything, but they probably think it's all part of the joke anyway, and I'd be surprised if I did. If someone legitimately did want to do it, though, I don't know. Well, but a fun thing there, just a fun thing. Elizabeth Banks is joining them and offering a free snake for 100,000 cases of wine. That's right, 100,000 cases, is that? Yeah, 100,000 cases. So you can get more than one. Your choice, too. It says, your choice is non-venomous. So that's pretty cool. Get to ask for a very rare python or something like that. Enduring wine myth. This is an interesting article. I found it interesting because they talked about a couple of my, I don't want to say pet peeves, but a couple of my questionable things. It's said that almost all myths are eventually dispelled, and at one truth, so therefore you just accept them and go along with them, and nobody ever questions them or anything else. And that has happened in the wine industry for a long time, a lot of these myths. A good example, back in the 70s, it was common knowledge that the finest wines in the world come from France, and everybody else was secondary or tertiary to French wine. And then the Judgment of Paris happened in 1976, where American wines were picked number one in Cabernets and in Chardonnays. And it was like, oh my gosh, you can't be serious. But yeah, that's what happened. And the French tried to put all sorts of reasons why this was not true. And they said that the case of the Parrish judgment, the judges had no experience with American wines or California wines. And the ratings was based on the fact that they probably thought they were tasting French wines. And so, therefore, the scores came in because they thought they were tasting French wines, not California wines. And they had zero experience with California wines, so they simply awarded the points to the wines with greater intensity, which would be French wines. But California wine stepped in there and says, ha-ha, we fooled you. We've got ourselves some great wines here. And you liked them whether they were California or not. And that really surprised them all. The wine tasting world learned that California can be just as interesting as everybody else. And so, therefore, the myth that the French was the best was destroyed. And Americans have taken this to the bank. I'll tell you what, they have cashed in on this. That happened in 1976, and the Americans and the American wine industry still talk about it. And so it was, you know, a good thing. You know, the 100-point scoring system is something that is used all over. It's another – oh. My engineer just came in and poured me some wine. What is this? Urgency, the Cabernet Sauvignon Urgency of 2020 out of, I have no idea where, out of California, of course, because that's what I buy most of the time. Says, even before the Urgency vineyard was planted, Clay Shannon's instincts told him that the blend of volcanic soils would produce full, rich flavors and long, warm summer days would ripen the grapes perfectly. This special piece of dirt creates wines that do not require long aging, and lush flavors show well upon their release. So, produced and bottled by Shannon Family of Wines, Kelseyville, California. Not sure where Kelseyville is exactly. It is how much alcohol? I don't know. It has to say somewhere because it is required by the law. Here it is, 13.9% volume. So, Urgency out of California. Why wait to enjoy? Attack life with urgency. So, let me thank you. My engineer just brought me my taste for tonight.
Kelseyville, in case you're wondering, is located just southeast of Lakeport, California.
Oh, that helps.
Okay. Oh.
And Lakeport.
it's located northwest of Sacramento near, Mendocino?
Northwest of Sacramento, yeah.
Yeah, quite a bit. Between that and the Pacific north, you know, in the northwest part near the Pacific than
north of Napa,
north of Santa Rosa. Let me see where am I at here? Napa. Where's Napa? Anyway, it's over there.
Yeah, St. Helena. Yeah.
Okay.
Good legs on this for those of you who are ones you like to see. Legs on the glass. That's some nice legs on this. Mini and rather slow. Good dark, rich color. Oh, yeah. I always look down through the wine to see if I see my fingers, and I can't see them at all through this. This is really a pretty dark wine. And nose is... Oh. I don't know. Hint of chocolate and classic cab dark berries, but I'm not picking up any particular one, just a berry nose and a slight hint of chocolate and the taste. Oh, that's very good. It's got We've had it before. We've always liked it. In fact, I think we just picked up another one a couple of days ago. But it's got just enough tannins in it to give you that little bite in the mouth, a little dryness. The acid is very well balanced on this. It's not overpowering or anything. It's balanced well with the tannins. It said on the bottle, you know, no need to age it, drink it now, which I actually would love to drink it now. I am drinking it now because I like that little bit of tannin in the taste. I think it probably could lay down for a year if you wanted to, but I would see no reason why. Personally, I like the taste of this now. So, Intensity 2020, you can pick it up at any show. I think this was around $15, $16, if I remember. You can find them on sale every once in a while. But very nice wine. And it's located north of Napa, what Mike was telling us. So, I will be having to sip on that periodically during the rest of the show. But as I was saying, Americans have a love affair with the 100-point scoring system. When it comes to wine, 95 wine is so much better than an 89. And so, therefore, it's a fantastic score for 95. 89, not so much. But, you know, 95, 89 out of 100 points, that's still a pretty good score. If you were a baseball player and you were hitting 0.890, your batting average would be phenomenal. You'd be getting a hit 9 out of 10 at bats, basically. So, you know, we just love this 100-point scoring system. Ratings are personal and objective. You know, it's just like this article says, you know, it's like giving the Beatles' Yesterday album a 95 and then the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black an 89. Yeah, okay. But when in reality you must prefer Paint It Black and despise Yesterday, then the number system is just sort of silly, if you will. And so, but we're entrenched in the number system, and we always will be, thanks to Robert Parker and his original numbering and Wine Spectator, and it's taken off, and that's basically what we do now. It gives us an idea of where we're at. Perfectly possible to evaluate wine in a different way. It won't work though because people are just too entrenched in what we do now. We embrace the 100-point scoring system, and it is going to be with us. There's other ways we can define wines and talk about it, but it's not going to happen. So, speaking of myths of wines, the 100-point scoring system is the way we're going to do it, even though it's not perfect. It is something that everyone is used to. And the sad thing about the 100-point scoring system is not everybody scores the 100-point scoring system the same. Wine Spectator starts at 50, and I think now they're up to starting at 70, but Wine Enthusiast, I think, starts like at 80 or something like that. And, you know, it's just different places have different point scoring systems and all that. So if it were consistent all the way around, then I would be more enthusiastic about it. It's like, and if I could editorialize for a moment here, Canada has a number system for their wines. And the number system tells you that if it's a, I don't know, I think it goes up to 5 or 6, and you Canadians are listening, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it goes up to 5, maybe 6. And if it's a 1 or 2, then it's a dry wine. If it's a 3, it's a medium dry. If it's a 4, it's sweetener. If it's a 5, it's a sweet wine. And in practice, that would be a great method to judge how sweet a wine is. But from what I understand, there are no national standards on that. There is nothing in Canada that states if it's got this much residual sugar, it should be this. And if it's got this much, it should be this. And so therefore, leaving it up to the wineries to rate those amount of residual sugar. Now, there's guidelines, but there's nothing more than that. So from what I understand, you can give it a 4 when it really deserves a 3, or even a 4 if it deserves a high 2, because you want people to get it, because people tend to like the sweeter wines and you want to sell it. That's my problem with that system. Excuse me. So, if it's a standard system for everything, I have no problem with numbering systems, but a lot of times it isn't. Here's another myth that this person brought up here, though, in this article, is the fact that when storing wines, it's in 2021, a brainy colleague of mine, Deborah Parker Wong, brought up another myth that has been repeated as gospel. When storing wines, all bottles must be laid on their side to keep the corks moist and preventing from oxidizing. Research papers going back as far as 2005, however, have clearly demonstrated that this is simply not true. Not only is there more than enough humidity in bottles to keep corks intact and wine fresh, researchers found that wine bottles are probably better off stored upright. If, however, you are storing wines for a long-term maturation, you still need to keep bottles as close to optimal temperature, that's 55 to 60 degrees, as possible, because temperature, more than anything, is what affects wine quality during long-term cellaring. So, he's saying that you don't have to lay them on the side. I probably am still stuck in the old school on that, because I really think you have to. And so, you know, take it as you will on that, but I really think, you know, laying them on the side is going to keep that cork moist. And I've seen dried out corks before, and it's not nice. Another thing, and one of the things that really caught my eye on this article, was decanting. And I am never have been a big one on decanting wines. I think it's an unnecessary thing to do, simply because, you know, let it breathe. And as far as I'm concerned, you can let a wine breathe just by swirling it in your glass. That's going to let it breathe. Or if you really want it to breathe, pour it from one glass to the other a few times, and that'll get air onto it. So I've never been a real big fan of decanting. And people argue with me up and down about it and all that. And I say, you know, the idea that you open up a bottle and let the bottle stay open, and that will air it out and let it breathe, and then it will be better, is to me always ridiculous, because how much is that bottle going to breathe at the bottom with that little cork hole at the top and all that wine? All it's not. I mean, let's face it, you'd have to leave that open for a week before it get that much air into it. Well, so I've always been, you know, not one to open up a bottle and let it breathe that way. And then the people say, well, you need to uncork it and then aerate it. Just put it in a canister, so that it will have a chance to aerate that way. And again, I'm thinking, you know, it's not going to make a big difference. Well, this article here, he said, it says, I like to cite the December 1997 issue of Decanter. Okay, now, the Decanter magazine is out of England, and it's proclaimed itself as the world's best wine magazine. Now, yeah, it's good. It's they stay, the Decanter magazine, if you're not familiar with it, is an English magazine, and they really stay old world wines more than anything. Wine Spectator and Wine Enthusiast and more New World, but Decanter is a good magazine. And the Cancer Magazine reported this report in 1997. They asked a double-blind tasting involving Hugh Johnson, Stephen Spurrier, Serena Sutcliffe, Master of Wine, and Patrick Leon, who was at the time the winemaker for Montan Rothschild. Okay, so you got yourself some well-knowledged people. And they were asked to assess the quality of four wines, a 1961 Montan Rothschild, a 1982 Cleric Milon, a 1980 Darmaler, and a 1990 Montan Cadet. And each of these wines were presented in different ways. They were uncorked a few minutes ahead of time and then poured and tasted. Uncorked a few hours ahead of time and then poured and tasted. Uncorked and poured into a decanter a few minutes ahead of time before poured into glasses and tasted. Uncorked and poured into a decanter a few hours ahead of time before poured into a glass and tasted. And uncorked and then immediately poured into glasses and tasted. That is no breathing at all. Guess which wines across the board were the ones that this impartial panel of expert tasters chose. The bottles that were uncorked, immediately poured, and tasted. It turns out that breathing for a few minutes or a few hours really did absolutely nothing to change their mind on how good the wine was. And if anything, it could end up being detrimental because it could start losing stuff. Now, I thought that was extremely interesting because you're always hearing this, you've got to do the breathing. The wine's got to breathe. Well, getting air into it does get it breathe. I get a glass of wine, I swirl it in my glass, that's breathing. That's going to get the air. That does open it up a little bit. You know, it's just you can't help yourself. You get a glass of wine in your hand, and the first thing you do is you swirl it. I mean, it just... And it does open up the air, the aroma. And actually, if you don't think it's true, you can do that with anything. You can do that with coffee or whiskey or a Pepsi or anything. I mean, it works with anything. Once you start throwing air into it, it's going to open up the aroma a little bit more. And it does with wine also. So put it in the glass and drinking it, aerating a little bit in the glass, is going to get your taste right there for what you need. And then another thing that they dispel the myth on is cost. Just because it costs more does not make it taste better. And this is something we've talked about on the show before. The wines from, say, $7 to $15, $7 to $18, they're all going to be about the same. You're going to find your different ones that are going to taste a little bit different. But then when you jump up to the $15 to $30, you're going to see a difference in quality there. That's your biggest jump in quality. When you jump on up in prices from there, there's going to be a difference, but it's going to be subtle. And most of the time, you won't really notice the difference. And so the cost doesn't really affect it a lot, unless you make that one jump from the 7 to 15 up to 15 to 30. That's where you're going to see a difference. But otherwise, paying $200 for a bottle of wine and $100 bottle of wine, subtle differences, but not enough to, for most people, not enough to justify the difference in cost. So, just some wine myths that most people are used to. This was written by Randy Caparoso, and he's a full-time journalist photographer from Lodi, and he's won numerous awards in restaurants and as a sommelier in Hawaii for 10 years and all sorts of awards and credentials by his name there. So this was not written by somebody who just decided to write an article. He does have himself a lot of creed there to be able to write this article. So, Okay, let me go to no, not there. I got a very nice email from a Melissa in England. And she had, it was pretty long. She told me about the champagne or sparkling wine in England and how it's really taken off and how it's become important and how they're using the same grapes as they use in France and how it's a pretty big business now. And she wanted to know if I was interested in guests. And, well, heck yeah, I'm interested in guests. So I am corresponding with her, and we'll see if we can't get some guests on from England. And I don't know how we're going to work this out. We may have to pre-record because our 7 o'clock time here, I think they're 5 hours ahead of us in England, 5 or 6 hours. I'm not sure. So, and if they are, then I would put them 1 o'clock in the morning when they start to show their midnight or 1 o'clock. So we may have to pre-record some of those shows. We'll have to wait and see. But I am corresponding with her, and we'll see what we can come up with on getting some English wineries on the show here in the near future. Okay, let me go to this next one. Oh, counterfeiting wines. Oh, yeah. This counterfeiting wines is, I've talked about counterfeiting wines quite a bit. And the big business in counterfeiting wines, and, you know, we talked about the guy who was thrown in jail for it and all that. But this article sort of open my eyes a little bit more here. It says that the counterfeit wines and spirits globally was surpassed $3.18 billion in direct sales. And it was in all levels. We always think about counterfeits in the higher echelon wines, the higher levels of wine, the more expensive wines, but it's not always true. It says over 7,000 jobs across the beverage industry was lost, and the cost to governments was $2.61 billion in tax revenues because of counterfeit spirits and wines being one of the big ones on there. And it's all price brackets. That's the thing that caught my eye on this. They said it wasn't just the higher end. We all have recently, and I reported on it, Rudy Carnielwin and his counterfeit wines, and he got caught, and he was, you know, doing it. But it's not just him. It's at all levels. The wines are being counterfeited at every single level and every single price point. If you can throw something cheap into a bottle that normally sells for $20, and you can throw something in there that instead of costing you, say, $5, $6 to make the wine and then the bottle and everything else, and only costs you $1 or 50 cents, substitute it for that, you're way ahead of the game. And that's what's happening. It doesn't, and the volume is much higher. And the thing is, with cheaper wines, when you start counterfeiting cheaper wines, people accept it more. They will taste a wine and they'll say, oh, this has gone bad. And they'll just walk over and they'll pour it down the drain. And they won't follow up on it. They won't check and see if there's anything that should be done about it. And it happens a lot. That's why the counterfeiting of cheaper wines is so lucrative. Because when you get cheaper wines, you just sort of go, well, okay, this went bad, and I'm not going to drink it now. Or some people are saying, well, I paid for this, I'm going to drink it anyway, and it's not that bad. And that happens a lot. and you all are sitting there chuckling now because, you know, everyone's done that at one time or another. I think, wow, this isn't that bad. I'll just go ahead and finish it. It is bad. Okay. It's bad wines. They're not good wines. They're not what you paid for. And if it's not what you paid for, then you need to say something about it. You need to pursue it. There's lots of ways. If you don't think your wine is true, then you can have it examined. You can have it authenticated. And there's lots of things they look for. Different anomalies in the ink, the paper color, the texture, uneven label placement, signs of glue. Ultraviolet flashlight can pick up things in it. There's all sorts of stuff that you can find out. And if it's an older wine before the 50s, that ultraviolet won't work because they didn't use it then. So it will work because they didn't use it then. So, and the bottle sizes, too, can make a difference. A lot of producers didn't use a large bottle size before 1978. So you need to have your knowledge. If you're going to get something older, you need to have your knowledge that it is one that is authentic for that era, for that time. And you need to ask. You need to get wine from reputable people. If you are buying wine online, be sure that these are reputable people. If you find that you purchase a counterfeit bottle or you are unsure, you need to make steps to rectify this. And it's on any level. If you got yourself a counterfeit bottle of wine and it is, or a bad bottle of wine even, let's talk both of these in one category, bad bottle or counterfeit bottle, take it back to the store or the liquor store. If that is the first step, if that's the first thing you're doing, then take it back to them. That's the first thing you need to do on those levels. If you got it anywhere else, you purchase it through a vendor, you purchase it through an auction, you purchase it through a charity auction, anything like that, contact them. Don't send the bottle back. Contact them. If you return the bottle and it is counterfeit and they know about it, that gives them a chance to resell it again. Don't do that. Okay, contact them and let them know, you know, I believe this bottle is not what it's supposed to be. Where did you get it? What's it? You know, question them and find out what it is. You should demand full restitution on everything, the current value, expenses, everything for your bad purchase. Don't just say, well, I'll give you your money back, send me the bottle. No, I'm not going to do that simply because they could resell it and start the system all over again. And maybe the next person won't question them. So, keep the bottle and get a full restitution. And especially if you're ordering through auctions and stuff like that, individual people don't get wines from individual people unless you go through a broker or somebody like that. Actually, in the United States, it is illegal for one person to sell a bottle of wine to another person. It's in the laws, and it's simply to stop, prohibition laws and when you start doing moonshine and stuff like that, you're not supposed to sell alcohol individually to another individual. You're supposed to have your license and everything else. So if you buy it from an individual, you don't have a whole lot of recourse if it is counterfeit or something. So avoid doing that. Try to go through a brokerage house or some sort of resale house if you possibly can, because in that way that will protect you a lot more against the possibilities of counterfeit. So, like I say, the reason it caught my eye here is the fact that counterfeit, this article said, is not just on the expensive end. It is throughout the industry on all levels. And they mentioned liquors, too. They didn't say it was just wine, but they said liquors, too. There's lots of people who like the older vintage of different liquors, and those could be counterfeit just as easy as wine can. So keep it up front and keep an eye on it whenever you're buying wines. Red wine has been told over and over to us to me anyway, at the wine. Oh, red wine gives me headaches. No. There are theories, most notably, that red wine contains histamines, and histamines are a known cause for headaches. But research from Oregon a few years ago disproved a direct connection between histamines and headaches from the wines. So, it's, you know, for the lovers of 00 natural wines, a research paper last year showed that wines bottled without sulfites may actually have more histamines than conventional wines. So, if histamines do have a connection to the headaches, then, well, I don't want any sulfites that could lead to more histamines and not the sulfites. Sulfites are used as preservatives. I've talked about this before, and you're going to find it. Red wine headaches are now being connected with phenolics. Phenolics, P-H-E-N-O-L-I-C-S, phenolics. The theory is that that's why it might be the case. First thing they have to do is find a correlation. And that's why there's a crowdfunding request to do research into this. And it's from, excuse me, it is from Oregon. And I think this is Oregon. I'm sorry, let me back up here and see where these people are. UC Davis, University of California at Davis, which is premier wine school in the country. You would think that they would have the money to do it. But they're asking money for a crowdfunding page to do this study. And so, therefore, it won't be influenced by anybody or anything. They just want to say, okay, this is the study we did, and it wasn't paid for by any entity that could cause us to switch our focus. And that happens so often in these things. So the crowdfunding request is only for $25,000, which sounds cheap for a medical research project. But it turns out that some university politics are at play here. They wanted $25,000. The university wanted him to ask for $10,000. So he negotiated to $25,000. Waterhouse is... Professor Waterhouse is the head of this, Dr. Andrew Waterhouse, who is a professor of enology at UC Davis and the project leader, settled on $25,000 as the goal for this. And he said that they may need to get more than the $50,000 to complete the project properly, but they are working on it. To try to get the funds to do this research. And it's going to be a long-term research. It's not going to be something they're going to do. The crowdfunding site will be up through February the 28th, which is only a couple of weeks away, a week and a half away, a little over a week and a half away. So the link is crowdfund.ucdavis.edu/project/29940. I'll put that up on the Facebook page for anyone who might want to donate anything to it. It's entirely up to you. There, like I said, it's a crowdfunding thing that UC Davis is doing. And they expect the laboratories to work on it and all that to do it at major discounts. So the money will actually be used for the research and not just full price to pay the people to get it. So that's going to go. I'll put that up on the Facebook page if you're interested. But they're trying to prove exactly why red wine gives people headaches. We're going to do some major research. I don't know. Maybe you can even volunteer to be a test subject when they get around to doing that. That might be something there that is a possibility. Who knows on that? Biodynamics. There is a pretty big article here, and I'm just going to tease you with it. It's an Italian winery that's doing biodynamics, and they want to show people that it's not easy. It's hard. It's hard to do biodynamics, and they ask the question, is it worth it? Well, I will just tease you with it. I'm not going to tell you about it right now. I will bring it up and talk about it next week. So it's just something for the future to look at there. It's a good article. I read a lot of it, though. It's a good article. I'll go into it deeper. Okay, let's see. This is... I want Free the Grapes, Florida. Okay, Free the Grapes bill in Florida since, I live in Florida. This is interesting. This is, right now, you can't sell wine in single containers holding more than 1 gallon in Florida. Okay, that is the maximum you can sell them. This bill would remove the size limits of bottles of wine in Florida. Local wine shop owners say they don't think it will impact sales for their business, which it probably won't. You're not going to buy a gallon and a half of wine or something like that. You can buy, The bill would remove size limits of bottles of wine in Florida. They do, however, think it will benefit people looking to throw a party or large event. They also believe it would be beneficial for bars and restaurants. And the House has passed this already almost unanimously with a vote of 117-1. I don't know why one person would vote against it, but 117-1. That does Florida, you cannot get anything over a gallon in one container. So therefore you can't get these great big bottles, the Nebuchadnezzars and the Magnums and the double Magnums and all these real large size, you can't use those. You can't get those in Florida because it is illegal for one container over a gallon. So what this bill would do is open up the chance to get those bigger bottles, which are always fun at weddings or at corporate events or stuff like that, to have one of those big bottles on a table so you can have someone there that pours and decants it for people and all that. So that was, I think that's the reason why they're looking at limiting the size events, because more than likely with all the conventions and everything that goes on in Florida, it would be beneficial to just about everybody to be able to offer the wine bottles and bigger containers. Sting is a vineyard owner. I don't know if you know that or not. Yes, the singer, Sting. He has a vineyard in Tucson, Tuscan, Italy. And he is trying to get the Italian Senate to approve a law that, citing biodynamics, how he has this presented. The bill citing biodynamics, which last year, when they approved with the Italian Senate, only needed one more vote in the lower house to become a law. After outrage from scientists who petitioned against it, it has been blocked. According to the Times, wine expert reports, which slammed the singer turned wine producer's methods, have now also been blocked by Italian MPs this week by blocking and amending a bill that would have granted biodynamic methods legal recognition. So we've avoided giving official status to a method that has no basis in science, said Ricardo Magai. Who led the opposition to biodynamics. So Italy does not have a recognition of biodynamics. Sting tried to get it there, and they're blocking it. And it was noted that if left unchanged, the bill would almost certainly have placed biodynamics on equal footing with organic farming, qualifying the method used at Sting's estate and thousands of others for funding and promotion But the Senate, after the it was approved by the Senate, Italian MPs voted to change the legislation immediately, amplifying yet another battle between science and 4,500 Italian farmers. And it's not just vineyard, but it's just the use of biodynamics in the country of Italy itself does not get the recognition. They said if it does, it would be the same as organic. And, oh, my gosh, you don't want it to be the same as organic. Well, actually, biodynamic, I think, is a step beyond organic. So maybe they should do their reading up on it. But this is an ongoing thing. Wine critic Jane McQuitty said, trust the Italians to come over all sanctimonious about biodynamic wines. Biodynamic wine is just a step up from organic wine production, encouraging each vineyard to be the best it can be. But the Italians say, no, no, we don't want it. It could be on the level of organic. No, oh well. So that's what's happening with the biodynamic wine industry in Italy right now, which is a little bit silly of them, but you know, who are we to judge? Something else I'm going to for a little bit here before we go for tonight. This was just last Monday. I read this one. Let's see, today's Thursday, so you know, 3 days ago. Our president has been presented with a bill to scrap the anti-competitive booze laws, which could help small businesses. So, in a 64-page report to the president, U.S. Treasury found that America's beer drinkers pay up to $478 million per year, more than they should. It also revealed that there are significant barriers to entry to the markets for alcohol and that many advantages promised to consumers from previous mergers and acquisitions have never materialized. The missive may give the president the incentive he needs to amend federal legislation to ease entry into the sector and to reduce prices. Okay, the report was named Competition in the Markets for Beer, Wine, and Spirits. And it results from his executive order that he issued last summer to find ways to reduce company consolidations and improve competition to protect U.S. consumers, workers, and small businesses. I mentioned that report last year that he was going to work on that and that he asked for that to be taken care of. It is now in front of him a little bit more, and it's up for debate for, you know, some people. So we'll see. Over 6 months, the Treasury received submissions from more than 800 consumer groups showing interest in these bills. And it's a series of reforms, including stricter merger and acquisition scrutiny by the Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission. I've read you different acquisitions and different companies buying out other companies. This is going to be a little bit more under the microscope. The Treasury also wants different tax rates for producers and to reform outdated state and federal regulations. And some of these date back to the end of Prohibition back in 1933. In order for new entrants and new wineries to grow in their business. Another thing, the 1933 legislation brought in the three-tier system to separate producers, wholesalers, and retailers. This has created a complex patchwork of rules that individual states have for their own system. We've talked about this three-tier system a lot on this program and how I think it's ridiculous and I hate it. It says that the wide liberalization to state distribution and retail monopolies. The new administration is committed to ensuring an economic environment that promotes fairness and competition. It says the one of the most restrictive constraints highlighted is the post and hold system, such as in Connecticut. That was brought in to maintain high prices and discourage consumption at the end of prohibition. The system requires distributors to publish their price with state officials and then maintain those prices for a given period, usually 30 days. So post and hold laws, that's just one example. There's other states that have it also. But this goes on about a lot of the different stuff. I'm not going to get into it because there are also some really good replies here that talk about it. And there's a couple of links that I went to, and the links are really pretty involved. And there's some interesting stuff in that. So I'm not going to get into it. I will look at it this week, and we'll talk about this next week, about what might come of this and what is the possibilities of this, you know, affecting prices of, well, not just wine, but beer and spirits. It's an all consuming bill that they're looking at. It's, you know, craft spirits and beer and wine and everything. There are a lot of alcohol lobbyists. There's more than 300 registered in Washington in 2017, and I'm sure there's more now because those numbers never go down. So over 300 registered lobbyists for the alcohol sector in Washington, and so they're up there pleading the case to everybody. There's almost enough legislatures. There are enough legislatures for every – well, no, not quite, for every congressman and every representative. So we'll see. I will follow up on this more and report more on it next week, which will be the last Thursday of February. You want it? Yeah, wow. So
already.
Already.
Well,
yeah.
That is. Okay, let me close down some chats here so I can get ready to do the so that's going to be February 24th will be the next show.
Okay, good.
And let me go back here. Had to boot a couple of people out of chat on Blog Talk Radio because they don't.
Oh, did you?
Oh yeah. That's okay.
They were being bad people.
They did not yeah.
Oh.
One was for sure. Hey, you know what? When you have 273,000 listeners to a show over the years, it's bound to.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't all be on topic or, you know, behave themselves.
That's true. We found that out now. So yeah. Oh well.
Yeah.
I guess so, we can say thanks for listening anyway, but don't call and chat again. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I learned a couple of things about chat. I can ban by IP, IP address, which I did, and that worked. So did that to one and was waiting for the other to return, and they never did. So, but I looked them up and go from there.
That's interesting.
Thank you all for tuning in. Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. And we'll catch y'all next week, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, and the other one. What is it? YouTube.
YouTube. Thanks for listening, and have a safe week. And happy President's Day. That's Monday, I guess, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, all right.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Take the day off.
That's right. There you go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Well, that's not fair. The video didn't show up on the other platforms. Huh. All right, let me close that out.
Facebook button just beeped on me again there, too.
Oh, let me close out the streams. Okay. I don't know why it didn't show up. Oh, I guess it's green room.
Green room.